Because the scripture does not teach that Jesus is coming for his throne, but that Jesus is coming from his throne.
Pastor Brian Wolfmiller speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And this says, in fact, a little bit less about the second coming and more about how it is right now. That we are the church that confesses the ascension that Jesus has, remember, as he promised, that he has gone to prepare a place for us. And that even now he is sitting on the throne and he is working by his word, by his baptism, by his body and blood to prepare us for that place. So that when he comes back to rescue us.
You can listen to Pastor Wolfmiller's teaching, Making the Case for a Biblical Approach to the End Times, on an audio DVD from the Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a recommended donation of $300 to Issues Etc. Just click the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
We're liberal in the sense that the liberal arts schools are liberal. We're an urban newspaper. We write about evolution as a fact. We don't give equal time to creationism. We are liberal in the sense that we are open-minded, sort of tolerant, urban. Our weddings page includes, and did even before New York had a gay marriage law, included gay unions. So we're liberal in that sense of the word, I guess.
So I'll ask you directly, and you can answer directly, does the New York Times have bias in favor of Democrats or liberals?
Aside from the liberal values, sort of social values thing that I talked about, no, I don't think it does.
That's former New York Times editor Bill Keller unashamedly admitting that the Times news coverage on social issues is liberal. Now, he's not talking about the editorial page of the New York Times, which is slanted to the left. He's talking about the New York Times daily news coverage of social issues. Well, there was recently a column in the New York Times written by the ombudsman, the editor there, and it asked the question, why readers see the Times as liberal? It's not the first time one of these has been written. We're going to be talking with Terry Mattingly about this latest attempt at self-reflection on the part of the paper of record in New York, and we're going to see what he thinks about it. Did it adequately deal with the issue of religion in the New York Times liberal slant? We'll answer that question with him. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Terry Mattingly, Pastor Paul McCain joins us. We'll continue our series on the Lutheran Confessions. We're in Luther's Large Catechism today, the Lord's Prayer, third petition, Give Us This Day Our Daily Bread. Luther says it starts with the humble bread basket, but expands out into pretty much all of society, what we're praying for and against in that petition. Pastor Hans Feeney will join us after that. We'll be talking about how one talks to children about an all-too-common thing today, almost on a daily basis, the incident of killing police, those who shoot police officers. Pastor Hans Feeney will join us. He's written for The Federalist on that subject. Then Clark Forsyth, acting president of Americans United for Life, will join us. We'll talk about abortion legislation in the states after the Supreme Court's recent Hellerstadt decision. Joining us to talk about a recent essay in the New York Times by public editor there titled Why Readers See the Times as Liberal, Terry Mattingly. He's a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Many, and for many years, have seen the New York Times as elitist. Is that a fair characterization of that paper?
Well, yeah. It's an accurate statement that it's elite. Now, the degree to which it's elitist, sort of just, do the math. This is the elite newspaper of New York City. And to what degree is New York City in a position of elite culture in relation to the United States? So to some degree, you could say it's the elite of the elite. And then you throw in the fact that Pope John Paul II, during a visit to New York, referred to New York as the capital of the world. So if you're the elite, most prestigious newspaper in the capital of the world, doesn't that make you an elite publication? But you're asking elitist, which to some degree means, does it see itself as being better than everybody else. And I would say to some degree, I think we should owe them at least a little bit of sympathy there. If I worked at the New York Times, I think I would think pretty highly of myself, you know, in terms of my position in the world of journalism, wouldn't you?
Yes.
If you were leading a talk show right now at NPR, wouldn't you think pretty good of yourself?
Made it, yes.
How about BBC?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You would literally be talking to the entire world at that point. And I've always argued that the only newsroom on planet Earth that is at the same basic level as the New York Times is BBC. If you're looking at global influence on what journalists and thus the world think about, that's it. You know the old saying, journalism does a horrible job of telling us what to think, but journalism does a great job of telling us what to think about. You put something on the front page of the New York Times and people will be thinking about it. That's power.
So this essay from Liz Spade, she's public editor, ombudsman, is essentially, as you point out, in the New York Times in the last couple weeks of July, why readers see the Times as liberal. You say this isn't the first time the Times has taken a crack at this subject.
No, in fact, the program that I led for the last decade, the full semester program I led in Washington, D.C., the very first lecture in that program, like a decade ago, was called The Spiritual Crisis at the New York Times. And it focused on the fact that at that moment, after a incredible plagiarism and improper ethics, you know, scandal that brought down the editor and the managing editor of the New York Times, the New York Times was at a moment of its most of its greatest vulnerability. And it was asking some very big questions, many of which we've talked about before on this show, and also has been the subject of writing at Get Religion, including the two pieces that I wrote on the 10th anniversary of Get Religion, kind of restating our purpose. One of them dealt specifically with this topic at the New York Times. So to make a long story short, the Times has been asking questions about its own ethics and place in the world for quite some time. This latest one, thus, is like a part of an ongoing dialogue that I still use in that lecture at the start of every semester in the program in which I teach, which is, if the New York Times is struggling to deal with religion and the role of religion in the world, then it ought to be fair game for Christians and other believers to be able to ask hard questions about journalism and religion. The New York Times itself is putting right there in public documents that they're struggling with these issues. Makes it fair game.
In the latest attempt to kind of be self-reflective from Liz Spade there at the New York Times, what did you find that was familiar? What did you find that was missing?
Well, it's let's go with the positive and the negative from my perspective. The positive thing is she asks a very good question, which is, in a very competitive world of journalism where you're trying to make a buck and you're trying to maintain your influence in the culture, why would you want to write off half of America? You know, if America is extremely divided into kind of this left-right culture war, et cetera, why wouldn't you go ahead and cover both sides? She quotes a letter from an editor from a self-identified liberal. It's really interesting. I never thought I'd see the day when I, as a liberal, would start getting so frustrated with the one-sided reporting that I would start hopping over to the Fox News website to read an article and get the rest of the story that the New York Times refused to publish. And that's from a liberal reader. She said, you ought to read the letters from the conservatives. But to make a long story short, she simply says it's not healthy for such an influential journalistic institution to only be talking to half the country. And she quotes a couple of people, some of which are kind of, I would say, are in denial. And they say, no, we basically don't have any problems. We're, you know, we're doing better. We're doing okay. But others are saying, no, I mean, we are viewed so much as the liberal enemy of large parts of America that it started influencing our ability to even talk to people. You know, if you try to make a fair attempt to cover conservative issues and conservative voices and points of view. How do you do that if they hate you because they think you hate them? In other words, if you were the spokesperson for a morally conservative religious liberty organization, would you feel comfortable talking to the New York Times right now on issues related to gay marriage?
Probably not.
Nope. And there's a good reason. And that gets us to the negative side. She never really deals with the content of the disputes about bias and fairness at the Times. And in that sense, this new article isn't nearly as solid or as blunt as a very famous article that ran in 2004 by a previous public readers representative at the Times named David Occrient. And he wrote a piece with the famous headline, "Is the New York Times a liberal newspaper?" And then the first sentence of his piece said, "Of course it is." Now, in terms of Get Religion history, please note that that's almost exactly at the same time we started Get Religion. And it's before Bill Keller did his famous speech in Austin where he admitted that they were liberal on moral and social issues. But the most famous passage in that Occrient op-ed, that piece by him, said something like this: "For now, my main concern is the flammable stuff that ignites the right. These are the social issues: gay rights, gun control, abortion, and environmental regulation, among others. And if you think the New York Times plays it down the middle on any of them, you've been reading the paper with your eyes closed." In fact, he sums it up in a list that I always get a laugh out of for obvious reasons. He says, "If you are among the groups the Times treats as strained objects to be examined on a laboratory slide, devout Catholics, gun owners, Orthodox Jews, Texans, if your value system wouldn't wear well on a composite New York Times journalist, then a walk through the paper can make you feel like you're traveling in a strange and forbidding world." We can add Missouri Synod Lutherans to that list as well, of course, for the sake of many listeners. But he, I thought, was much more candid. And in the famous interview at the Lyndon Baines Johnson Library in Austin, the editor, Bill Keller, specifically addresses the Occrient column and says it was perhaps a little bit more blunt than he wished it was. And then without connecting the dots, Keller goes ahead and admits, yeah, we're biased on the moral and social issues, which leads to the term that you and I have used many times in here, that we created at at Get Religion, which is Kellerism, a philosophy that is no longer necessary for journalists to be fair and balanced and respectful when they're dealing with people that they know already know that they're wrong. In other words, if someone is wrong and you know they're wrong from your point of view, what's the incentive to cover them accurately or fairly? And we call that Kellerism. And that's at the heart of this entire subject, which is the New York Times is the most powerful newsroom in America and arguably the world. It matters that they think Orthodox Jews, Catholics, Southern Baptists, Texans, and other flawed and fallen and sinful from their perspective people don't deserve to be covered accurately. That matters.
There's candid, and it sounds like there's no shortage of that to go along in any of these self-reflective pieces in the New York Times. There's candid, and then there's we need to change. Is there any of that in any of these self-reflective pieces?
Well, that's where you have to then go back to a self-study that the Times did in response to that crisis in 2004. They came out with a document. They hired a bunch of former Times people and some outsiders to do a self-study of the Times. And that is a fascinating document that we've quoted over and over, you know, at Get Religion. And those documents remain available. They remain online, the most important of which is called Preserving Our Readers' Trust. And that document is up on the New York Times website for all to read. And what I thought is fascinating is that religion just keeps coming up over and over in this piece in terms of subject material that the Times struggles to cover well and subject material that leads to criticism of the Times. And the paper concluded that they simply these outsiders, this panel of experts, concluded that the Times needed more intellectual and cultural diversity in its newsroom, that if it really wanted to deal with America, it needed to have more people in that newsroom who understood things like what it was like to be in the military, what it was like to be a religious believer, etc. And it's fascinating that in his response to that document, Bill Keller basically says, yeah, you know, that's right, but then like a sentence later he says, but not really, that really doesn't mean need to change who we hire. To some degree, who a newsroom hires to its best reporting positions is a lot like faculty hiring at an elite university. Very few presidents, deans, and provosts want to hear people telling them, you know, your faculty is totally out of balance. It's very biased. It's very one-sided. You need to do a better job. And that's, in effect, what this panel said to the editors of the New York Times. And the New York Times brass essentially said, yeah, maybe you have something there, but not really. They played it off, to use the phrase. A number of years after all that, in Washington, one of my students at the Washington Journalism Center went to a lecture by Bill Keller. I believe it was at the National Press Club. I do remember that it was on C-SPAN. And in the Q&A section, my brave student stood up and read part of Keller's own document in which he says, you know, we could do a better job at that, and then read the quote from the panel challenging them to do a better job of hiring diverse intellectual people and talents and skills on issues of rural life, military life, middle America, and specifically religious faith, and asked Keller, so how is that going? Are y'all doing any better at that? And Keller waved him off and went right to the next question. So, no, there's candor in some of these columns, but I'm not sure there's any headway at the level of many of the editors, or at least the ones who are most public.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about an essay by the New York Times public editor titled Why the Readers See the Times as Liberal. Stay tuned.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
How has pop American Christianity replaced the Holy Trinity with the unholy trinity of me, myself, and I? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Has American Christianity Failed? It's written by regular guest Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Has American Christianity Failed? Is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or find out more at issuesetc.org. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month, Has American Christianity Failed? Welcome back to Issues, Etc. On this Thursday, August the 4th, Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about an essay by the New York Times public editor titled Why Readers See the Times as Liberal. Terry, you have also observed something about journalism, and that is it has a religious quality in itself. How does that play into this issue of its ability to be self-reflective?
Well, I mean, the phrase journalism is itself a religion comes from a famous article, once again, back about that same time, 2004, 2005, by a New York University journalism professor named Jay Rosen. And I'm proud to say that in that article, one of the key hooks in that article is him responding to a column I had written about the New York Times for then Scripps Howard earlier in the year. When Rosen says that journalism itself is a religion, he means it's a kind of secular religion in that it deals with truth-telling, it deals with attempting to find out what matters the most in life. The clergy of journalism believe they have a right to ask really hard questions and then provide the public with answers. And ultimately, they're very idealistic people who think they're trying to improve the world and help explain the world to itself. And in that sense, they're kind of a, elite clergy crowd when it comes to their social role. There are a lot of similarities between journalism and preaching, for example. I'm trying to remember who it was, but somebody years ago in a piece in Sojourners magazine, which I quoted in my quill piece on religion writing back in 1982, someone said, in journalism, you turn over the rock to expose the dirt, and preachers remove the dirt to expose the rock. In both cases, you're dealing with rocks and dirt. You're dealing with, you know, the dirty parts of life and the solid parts of life. You're making truth claims in both of these professions.
You mentioned earlier at least the temporary, momentary recognition that the newsroom was in dire need. The New York Times newsroom was in dire need of diversity. Liberals often demand diversity. Why don't we see more of it in newsrooms?
Well, I mean, they have focused on diversity that they can quantify in ways such as racial diversity, gender diversity, even sexual orientation diversity. They have, in effect, divided the diversity issue into some of the subcategories that you hear in political discussions of this topic. What I'm talking about and what the report, the self-study, talked about was more intellectual and cultural diversity, and that's why I compared it to academia. At that point, it becomes a very emotional issue. You're walking in and saying to the deans, you are deliberately hiring only journalists who share your point of view, and you're not interested in the other half of America. How would you feel if you were an editor and people hit you with that over and over for about 25 years?
I'd eventually just stop listening, probably.
That's exactly what she said in the article, in the new piece. She says she talked to a bunch of people in the newsroom and who basically just rolled their eyes and said, look, that argument's going on so long, we just really don't care about it much anymore.
Terry, how do you respond to someone who says, look, Terry Mattingly, he must be one of those Republican knuckle-dragging Rush Limbaugh ditto heads, and that's why he is critical of the New York Times? How do you respond to that, Terry?
Well, I would say that all of those people have a lot of listeners. Didn't happen to be me. But that if you were attempting to sell newspapers and advertising to all of America, you probably would be interested in what people think in red zip codes and listening to Fox News and other things. You know, I myself am someone who lives in southern Appalachia in a very conservative culture in Tennessee, yet now teach part-time in New York City. I'm sitting right now at the corner of Wall Street and Broadway. To some degree, I realize how these two worlds do not talk to each other. You know, at the same time, I guess you're saying they doubt my credentials, you know, as a mainstream journalist. I teach in Christian colleges, so I guess that paints me a certain way. I'm an Eastern Orthodox Christian. That's a pretty conservative church right there. And people now laugh at me when I identify myself as a pro-life Democrat. I hear from people on left and right who simply say pro-life Democrats don't exist, except that if you poll America's Democrats, about one-third of them hold positions that, for example, would be highly critical of Roe v. Wade. Maybe not all the way to banning abortion, but severe limitations on abortion in America. There are pro-life Democrats, and there are Republicans who don't fear government programs in things like health care and a lot of other things. There are many people in the middle of the American political spectrum who are morally conservative and politically more progressive. I think you and I have discussed the fact that I like to tell people that I could vote with the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference about 90% of the time. But can you label the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference as conservative? On war and peace, on economics, on medicine, on health care, on immigration, and a host of issues, aren't the U.S. Catholic bishops on the left? They're also opposed to the death penalty, as I am. I'm totally opposed to the death penalty. Is that liberal or conservative? But my motives for opposing the death penalty are identical to my motives on the issue of abortion in terms of moral theology. So label that. I don't think the New York Times even knows that many of us, that we even exist, or that there are radical First Amendment defenders such as myself defending the rights of the press and Wild magazines and Hollywood producers and everybody else under the First Amendment who somehow still think that same First Amendment applies to religion. Is that liberal or conservative? I don't like these labels much.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to continue our series on the Lutheran Confessions. We're in Luther's Large Catechism, the Lord's Prayer, and the third petition of that prayer, Give Us This Day Our Daily Bread, with Pastor Paul McCain. Stay tuned.
Comment and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one's study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Augsburg Lutheran, Shawnee, Kansas, Peace Lutheran, Fresno, California, Trinity Lutheran, Casper, Wyoming, Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas, Trinity Lutheran, Gillette, Wyoming, Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California, St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa, Redeemer Lutheran, Caquabeca Falls, Ontario, Canada, St. Jacoby Lutheran, Shawano, Wisconsin, and St. John's Lutheran, North Prairie, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.